but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Oregon State baseball on a run. Another roll. Mitch Canham's program winning the regional. Backs to the wall. Facing elimination. They win four straight. Combined margin of victory 50-6. And I thought, where have I seen that before? Oh yeah, Pat Casey. Back in the day. Going on to win a national championship by winning six straight elimination games. Oregon State baseball went back-to-back in 2006-2007. Won a third national title years later. And somebody asked me the other day, they said, where did it start? How did it start? And I thought, we got to get Pat Casey on the show. Got to bring him back and talk in those terms. In 2007, I went to church with Pat Casey. He invited me. He goes every day. And this was in Omaha, St. Mary Magdalene Church. I believe it's on 19th Street. Pat Casey said, meet me in front of the team hotel. And we walked to the church, and I wrote a column about that walk and his team, which was a true team in Omaha. Pat Casey joining us now. How you doing? It's baseball season.
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. How are you, John?
I'm doing real well. You've got to be awful proud. You're watching your catcher, who's now a manager and a coach, you know, continue the tradition and the program you started.
Yeah, it's super cool. You know, every guy on that staff, from the director of ops to the player development to the head coach, has played there. And so, you know, there's times it's hard, man. You wish you were in the dugout with them, man. And you think, I still look at those guys as being very young. And of course, when you're my age, they are. So, but what a great run they're on, and just the sustainability of the program has been really kind of cool to watch.
How important, you know, when we talk about building culture or keeping culture, you have all those guys who played for you who are now coaching. That has to help. That is a big help, because those guys lived it and understood it. But we see that happen in other teams with other sports, and maybe they don't get the carryover. Why do you think it was successful in carrying over beyond your time as coach?
Well, you know, a lot of reasons. I think the main reason is the purpose behind why they're doing what they're doing. You know, there is no question that they're very talented, and that comes with the territory, and that was earned. You know, I didn't have that opportunity when I walked in the door because we weren't playing in the South, and the program was in great shape. Don't get me wrong there. Jack Riley did a fantastic job, but back then the charge was to beat, you know, Washington and Portland State and Portland U and things like that. So when the thing popped, were we able to get in the South, that opened up the opportunity to get a different type of player and more of them. And so, but I just think, you know, the purpose behind why you're doing it. And I think those guys have a deep desire to maintain that culture. And I know right now, in a lot of programs, culture's not and can't be built when you have players for a year or 2 years. And, you know, my thought always was that I would rather have a guy unhappy with me while he's here and extremely satisfied when he leaves, if he accomplished something due to the fact maybe that, you know, he found a new spot. You know, your talent just determines what you can do, but your will determines how you do it and how often you do it and what are you willing to do to bring it to its max. And there's a lot of unsuccessful people walking around the world with talent, that's for sure.
Pat Casey with us. I've got a lot of listeners who don't know much about your background. You were an Oregon kid in the early 1970s. Trailblazers are the only pro team in the state. What connects you to baseball?
Well, just the fact that, you know, when you're a kid, you're going to be in the fall, you're going to play in the NFL, and in the winter, you're going to play in the NBA, and in the spring. You know, I just think that, you know, it was kind of strange. My high school baseball coach, a guy came in and coached my junior year named Tom Campbell. Unfortunately, he just passed away. But he was the first coach that ever made me realize how good I could be in baseball, because I really didn't care that much for baseball. When you're playing in the 60s in Little League and it rains every day and there's no diamond dry and there's no, you know, you get rained out. Where in the gym, you're playing all the time. In football, you're outside. And there was a lot more enthusiasm for football and basketball than there was for baseball. So I didn't set out to be a baseball coach, put it that way. But I did think that I'd be a coach. That part was something that I don't know why. It's just something that I thought that'd be great, man, to be a coach. So I played my way into coaching. How's that? You know what I mean? Once they kept telling me you're one step from the big leagues, I just didn't realize how big that step was, I guess. And so anyway, when I had the opportunity to coach at George Fox or go out and play another half season of minor league baseball, I requested, you know, that I would have a spot on the 40-man roster next year, and that didn't happen. And so I became a coach, and you know, the rest is what happened. It took on its own journey, and it was difficult at times, and it was amazing at times, and it's the same now. You know, I don't think that anything. I'm not the type of person that says that we won a national championship, and therefore I am satisfied. It just did everything you can imagine for me. I am totally satisfied. That just never was like that for me, and it was amazing, but it wasn't like I had reached the very top of the very highest mountain. It was like, okay, let's do it again, or let's find a better way. And that maybe is a little unfortunate. And I didn't maybe enjoy it as much as I should have. Why I was driven like that, I really don't know. But maybe that's why I retired probably earlier than I should have or could have.
But we see that a lot in successful people, that, you know, you're your own worst critic. You're going to think about the losses more than you're going to enjoy the wins. And it's part of what probably drives you and makes you focused.
Yeah, it could be. You know, I wish I was better earlier in my career at being able to understand that and how that affected people around me. You know, I think I was always one that thought that if I'm, you know, losing made me feel miserable. And then that's not a good thing either. And, I guess early in my career, I never understood how somebody else couldn't be miserable along with me, you know, you know, when you get a little wiser and you get a little more seasoned and you get your ass kicked a few times and you either get off the mat and you respond or you don't. And so, I was so fortunate. I don't know how all the marbles rolled in the same can, but, you know, people showed up that just needed to show up at the right time. And long before we went to Omaha too, there was guys in this program, you know, that I still can see Ryan Leif, and I can see Stranny, and I can see Chuck. I mean, these guys, some of them didn't get the chance to play in a regional who actually deserved it. And so anyway, it's a deep culture in my mind and in my heart and in my soul. And when I told RAD one time that, you know, you can't even imagine how many people will show up when you win big games, he kind of looked at me like, okay, come on, man. You know, like, because I wanted to expand the stadium, and I wanted to build a stadium, and I wanted to do this. And it was always like, you know, okay, go do it. And but I just can't help you. And so along with a bunch of amazing young men and coaches that helped me, and even, you know, administrators that got on board and said, you know, we're part of this. We have created together this thing we call Beaver Nation in baseball, and it is amazing.
11th season. You get to Omaha, and you get to Omaha with a roster that's got guys like Jacoby Ellsbury on it and Darwin Barney and Mitch Canham, of course, and, you know, some really good pitching. And, you know, those guys, how do you get an Ellsbury to your campus? And I think you've told the story before of going to Madras, and he didn't get the ball out of the infield, I don't think, the day you went to see him.
Yeah, you know, back then, getting a guy like Ellsbury to show up, it wasn't as difficult as it is today because you didn't have the recruiting systems they have today. And, no, you know, a lot of schools didn't think Northwest was a place to get a player until we started winning. So I actually saw him play. And the day I saw him play, they came over and played in Salem. And he didn't hit a ball in the infield, but he about outran every one of them. And, you know, he wasn't heavily recruited because he was from Madras. He played soccer. He played basketball. He was this phenomenal athlete that played in a very small school and played probably 20 high school baseball games. And then, you know, his senior year, the speed and the things he could do and the athleticism were remarkable. And he was drafted by the Rays, and we got him on the Bend Elks to go play in summer ball at the collegiate, which after I did it, I said, this is a mistake. So I went over there one night, and he was the best guy on the field. Of all of them. And here's a guy that's 2 weeks out of Madras High School. So we were fortunate to get Jacoby, and Jacoby made himself a player. I mean, and but there, like I said, there were so many pieces that fell into place. We had kids, Andy Jenkins, you know, it's kind of funny. Yeah. He was the first base coach for USC while we're playing him here. So, you know, that was kind of ironic. And he was obviously on my staff for many years. But a lot of guys, and they were, most of them were from Oregon and Washington, and
23 really cool. Kids from Oregon, 23 from Oregon alone.
I know, isn't that crazy? And you know, we had Chris Kunda from Philomath, and Gippy from down in Medford, and Darwin from Beaverton, and Mitch was from Lake Washington up there, and Shane McFeely, and then you had Lisman from over in Ontario, and you had Aaron Matthews, the year before that, was from John Day. And, of course, Jenkins was from South Salem High School. And then you had Gundy from Central Catholic. And you had Dallas Buck from Newburgh. And you had, you know, just Nickerson was from Oregon City. I could go on and on and on. I mean, there was a ton of them. And they all contributed. You know, it was amazing that those guys were not tempted by the NIL and the transfer portal and everything else. Actually, I probably wouldn't have a team after fall, you know. I was thinking that the other day. That's a good thing. I wasn't coaching that. I don't know how I'd navigate that. But amazing time. And, you know, it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And it is what it is today. And, you know, you go around the country. It's really amazing. You know, I'm doing some work with the Brewers, and I'll be sitting there with a coach, you know, and he'll be going, man, I watched that game on TV, man. It's like, that stadium is super cool, and things like that. And so people recognize the program, and I'm very appreciative of that.
All right, 2005, you get to Omaha. You win the regional. You win the super regional. You get to Omaha. You get a taste there. 06, you come back, and you win six straight elimination games to win the, you know, you go on to win the national championship. How in the world do you coach a team that has its back against the wall, and really, like, the proof of performance wasn't there yet? It was the grit was there, though, wasn't it?
Absolutely right. That is the perfect way to put it, you know. And at that time of the year, you know, you're not going to get any better in baseball, no matter how many swings you take. You've been practicing since September. It is just about will against will, and we're gonna show up. And I remember telling those guys, look, at the next time we lose, we'll never play together again. So just make sure that somebody just has to absolutely rip that jersey off your back. And, you know, we fought through it, man. And we were tied a little bit, you know. Geez, yeah, we needed to win a game. And I knew we were good enough to do it, and played Georgia, and we turned some big double plays and got good pitching from Nix and Gundy. And, you know, once we won, it kind of, that tension got away from it. Then we knew, okay, now it's just going to be a brawl. It's just going to be, you know, and that's kind of what I did. I mean, I get the scouting reports and I hear all the nonsense, and the guy's going to hit the ball to right if you're throwing a fastball out over the plate like every other guy, you know what I mean? If you hang a guy a cookie, he's going to hit it out of the ballpark, you know. He's going to throw a four-seam fastball 94 miles an hour. For me, I didn't care. Not at that point in the year, I didn't care. I don't care what the guy throws. It's just going to be it's going to be us and against them. And I mean, we have practiced in September. We are good enough to win and win against anybody, and they're good and they're good enough to win and win against anybody. So let's just see who comes out of this thing on top. And that's kind of what we did. And that kind of grew into its own deal. And you know, those guys are smart, man. All these kids, they get it, man. They know that the coach needs to give them the game on game day. He really does.
That next year in 07, you didn't finish the Pac-12 season or the Pac-10 season, whatever it was, on fire. I think you were sixth in the conference, but you guys had something. You had some metal. You'd been there before. You got Cannon behind the plate. Those guys are all a year older. Was that how much fun was that 07 year to sort of do it again?
Well, it wasn't very fun for a long time, I can tell you that. You know, you had to bring up the we really, you know, if you think about it, Darwin and Mitch were really the only two everyday guys back. And you know, we struggled to get through it. It was a new thing, man. You were the national championship and people wanted to undress you every time you went out there. And so, you know, we struggled. We really did. We did a few things. Once we flipped Joe Pa to the pin and put Georgie Race in the front of the game, that helped in that situation. We got a little excited when we got back to Virginia, knowing, okay, we've been here. This is a new season. And then the good Lord gave us a rain out that we needed because we lost one of the games, and then we came back. And I know Jonathan asked me, my son, he said, hey, you know, he asked me all the time, can we win whoever we're playing? I said, John, we won't lose again the rest of the year. And we didn't. It was the most momentum I've ever experienced. We won the rest of the games in the regional, took two in the Supers, and won five straight in the World Series. And that team was not as talented as the 2016. And the 2016, we'd lost a bunch of those guys. But, man, like you said, they knew it. They had it. They had the feel. And it was fun to watch.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I asked you, I think you're playing North Carolina for the championship. And, they had a bunch of guys that were high draft picks. And I said, you know, how do you overcome that? And you said, I don't need all the best players. I just need some of them. Can you speak more to that? Because, you know, you've run into teams as a coach where you're up against all these first-round draft picks. But, you know, how do you overcome that as a team?
Well, for us, it was the fact that we had to play a style of baseball, in particular that year, and most of the time, for most of my career, we weren't as talented as Texas and those people. At the end, we were, so you had to play the type of baseball. And for us, it was that we were able to hurt you in a lot of ways, offensively in particular. If you couldn't defend the bunt, we'd bunt. If you couldn't throw somebody out of second, we'd run. You know, we defended very well. We just took on the things that a lot of people don't deem important in the game, that we had to rise to a very high level in those areas in order to stay in the game. And my philosophy ever since, you know, we got into the South, and it was, if you don't shrink the game, you can't win. If we don't, I can't manage when it's 8-1, but if it's 3-2, then we can do the things we work on. But if it's 8-1, you got to hope for, you know, a couple walks and a slam dunk, right? And so we had to do what we did, and we had to do it really, really well. And that was, we had to defend, and we had to pitch, and then we had to put pressure on you offensively. And when we did that, we were a really good team. And there's days, you know, the very first game at Goss Stadium, on the first 1999 March 12th, we faced Barry Zito. He was better than we were. That's all I can tell you. You know what I mean? And you know, it's things like that people, they get run away with, you know, like, hey, you know, you had a bad game, and no, that guy on the mound was outstanding. And so, I don't know, we just had to understand ourselves. We had to be fighters. We had to be guys that, you know, knew that we had something in our locker room that somebody else didn't have, and we were willing to defend it and fight for it. And you know, that's kind of what we did. We did it for a long time. And winning is difficult, but winning a lot is really difficult.
Pat Casey with us, former Oregon State coach and the engineer of this Oregon State baseball operation. Mitch Canham takes over from you. What did you see in Mitch Canham that made you say, this is the guy to hand the keys to?
Well, it was pretty easy for me because of the fact that he played for me, and I knew his character. I knew his toughness. I knew his intelligence. And, of course, he was off managing, so he had that advantage. You know, had great people working with me, too. You know, and that's, you know, that's always a difficult thing when you have people like Nate and Bales and Jenks and people like that. Mitch, being at the age he was, being in the position he was, having been here as a catcher and being on national, I felt very, very confident that he needed to be here to compete for the job, and then I would live with the decision if it was somebody, as long as it was somebody that was an Oregon State guy. You know, I would have never been satisfied with someone coming here that wasn't, didn't have Oregon State blood, you know. And so I just thought he was obviously a very, very talented young man, and you know, he's proven that, and they've just done wonderful, and they got amazing kids, they got amazing talent. You know, this thing about not having a league ended up helping us out because the RPI was high because we played so many road games, and some of those teams that he was forced to play, he had no idea that Iowa would have a better year than any people anticipated in Cal Poly and Hawaii. So, you know, that was another thing that they mitigated. So that was a difficult situation to be on the road that much and then be able to handle that.
And he talked about that on the show. He said he hadn't expected that traveling so much, they spent a lot of time together, and they came together as a team maybe in a way that was a little more tight-knit because of that, you know, and they kind of made a commitment together to stay together. You know, in your last 14 years, you advanced to the postseason 12 times, you go to Omaha 5 times, you win 3 national championships. Amid that, you know, you also at the end of each season were kind of, I think, hinting, you know, a few years towards the end, hey, I don't know how many more years I can do this. And what did it take out of you each season? How did you feel at the end of the season on those late years?
Yeah, you know, I think you're exhausted. I think you're, like I said, I you know, and Mitch is so much better at handling the losing and the winning than I was. And he has a lot more patience. You know, I don't know. I think I was hard on myself. I think I was hard on players. I think I was demanding, and I think it was – but I would never demand something that I didn't expect of myself. And so, therefore, I think I kept raising the bar. And so when I raised the bar, you know, I felt that this – you know, this is – and, you know, I don't know. It's just you'd have to – in many situations, it is a very lonely journey. It was for me anyway, because even sometimes my assistants didn't – understand me, or they didn't get it. You know, we could win 9 out of 10 and we'd lose a game, and we'd be in a meeting, and I would be not very excited or not very happy, and they're like, well, I mean, we're 12-2, and I go, yeah, we should be 13-1 or 14-0. And I couldn't get off myself enough to think that was a healthy environment for me to continue on. And but I wouldn't do it if I couldn't do it that way, because I think there was something good about that too. Yeah. I do. And I get inspired when I talk to guys today that are, you know, just tell me how they maybe were successful in their job, or they just got a promotion or whatever, and they talk about going through difficult times that they said they appreciated. So, but I, you know, I'm like everybody else. You know, we get these opportunities in life, and we either seize them or we watch them drift away. And, you know, the days that we have here are all numbered, and they're like that for every one of us, and you don't want to give any of them up. I am so grateful that I got to do it, and I'm not one of those guys, and I've heard him say, yeah, I would never change a thing, and I'm just not a good enough coach to say I wouldn't. I'd have changed a lot of things. I wish I was as well, you know, really. And so, yeah. You know, there's times you do something, but I think that coaches get way too much credit, way too much criticism. I think they also, in certain cases, you know, there's a tendency in this profession for you to think this is about you. And that creates an ego. And the problem with egos is you have to feed them. And when you feed them, they get bigger. And when they get bigger, they eventually implode. Mm-hmm. And we've seen some great coaches, tremendous coaches throughout history, do 99 things out of 100 right, and then all of a sudden have the biggest decision in their life and feel like they're bigger than the game, and they'll be forever remembered for those horrible decisions. And you know what I mean? And so I was always able to understand and know this is about Oregon State baseball. This is about Darwin and Mitch and Jimmy and Bill, and I'm part of that, but it's not about me. And that drove me, because I felt I had expectations that they needed to meet, but also expectations that I had to meet, and that if I didn't raise the bar for them, that I would hate to have them call me in 5 years and go, man, I just wish you would have helped me be a better man, a better player. You would have pushed me. And I never, and so, you know, I live with all the good feelings, and also, you know, you wish you could do some things a little better. But the enjoyment I got of doing it, and the challenge, and the, you know, anything that's good, man, there's a price to pay, you know. And and sometimes you pay the price when nobody's watching. And for me, there were, you know, there were days it was pretty lonely, but I'm grateful, put it that way.
Pat Casey with us. You couldn't have known this at the time, but, you know, the Pac-12 would eventually implode, and that would be a big blow to Oregon State, and it would be a big blow to Mitch Canham and the athletic department at Oregon State. And yet the program holds together, and the guys make a commitment to each other, and they decide they're going to play for each other. And, you know, there's not this mass exodus like there is in other sports. And that is a very hard thing, but I think it's glued together with the culture that you built years earlier. I think, you know, you deserve some credit for that, and I know you won't take it, but I don't think it holds together if Pat Casey doesn't build what he built.
Well, if that's the case, that's great. But it, you know, these guys, like you said, these guys had to make that decision, and I do believe that there's a very strong culture there, no question about it. I think that is the foundation of Oregon State baseball. It's just, we are people that will march in there and take this thing on. And I think that that's a cool thing. And I think that these guys like that. And I think that, you know, that's something that they've taken on. And I worry about college athletics. I see teams eliminated that it just fascinates me, that I go back and say, you know, when you're in the locker room 1 year and you're gone the next year, or the guy you were locked with for 2 years is now third fiddle because somebody was in the transfer portal, it has to harm the continuity of what's going on. It has to harm, and I don't think that there's any secret that some really, you know, high-level, high-profile teams got eliminated when things got tough. And if you look at those teams, quite a few of them brought in a lot of transfers. And so is that the deal, or was it just that, I don't know, I look at University of Texas San Antonio, and them guys look like they played together for a while, and they look like they weren't taking any crap off of anybody. Yeah. And they rolled into Austin and left, you know, with their bags packed, man. And so we'll see. But now the fabric at Oregon State baseball is tremendous. And, you know, I always go back to the thing, and I always say, you know, because I remember 1 year there was this big presentation about what we were going to be wearing for our uniforms. And I just said, hey, listen, how come Alabama doesn't ever change their uniforms, or Penn State in football? How come that never happens? You know what I mean? I think we'll just stay with the unis we got, and if you want to add a little color to it, that's okay. But I think we're going to wear these for a long time. And so I really feel that there is a huge, huge part of success is obviously the culture. And they are bringing it every day there.
I know there were times where suitors came calling Notre Dame. That was well-publicized, LSU. Were you close ever to leaving, or what drew you back in? Because I know that ADs changed and, you know, some circumstance changed, but you got what you needed to keep it going.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know if I ever have a specific answer for all of them, you know. The Notre Dame thing was tempting because it was Notre Dame, but, the players we had and what we just done, the Texas thing was, you know, we just brought in those guys, and I told them I'd be here. There's, you know, I don't know what kept me here. It was obviously something that was important, or I wouldn't have stayed. Like I said, the good thing about it is I never really, I looked at Jonathan in quite a few situations where, can this guy survive in Baton Rouge? Is that a really good environment for him? No. And nothing wrong with Baton Rouge, just a big, big city. And, he's comfortable. That probably influenced me somewhat. I don't know. I never really got overly excited about those things. We won a national championship. You would expect somebody to want to come and ask you if you can coach there. So I was never a guy that wanted to move around. I love the fact that my family's all around here, and I have a lot of family, a lot of friends, and those things are important to me. So, what are we going to be remembered for is certainly, important. Nobody's going to really care who we are, but they're going to care what we did and how we did it and who we helped and who we, and that's a big part of staying here too, man. I thought that it was important for the players, man. Players that you recruit, tell them you're going to be here. I wanted to honor that. And so that was always on my mind.
Pat Casey, I appreciate you coming on the show, giving some of your time. I know that, this weekend's a big series. Before I let you go, what would you tell Mitch Canham, or the players? I know you probably won't, but what would you tell them if they asked you, hey, any advice for this weekend?
Yeah, I said this at the beginning of the show, and I said this to Mitch at the beginning of the regionals, and that is, at this point in time, it's not about baseball. It is not about baseball. It is just about your will against your opponent's will. And we have practiced enough. We are good enough. We are talented enough. They're talented. They're going to come in here. But, I would tell Mitch, which I won't do, but I know that he would already, you've done a great job to get him here, and some of the temptations you have when you're younger, or I did anyway, was to think that, maybe I have to micromanage the thing because the game's getting bigger, and I realized that's just the opposite. It was the easiest place to coach the bigger the game for me. I enjoyed it. I hated Tuesday games when you're playing somebody you're supposed to beat. It was like I was, in guys' tail all the time. They were laughing about it. Geez, Case, calm down. We're playing, and I said, no. But the bigger the game, the easier it is to coach because, why are you in a big game? You're in a big game because you're a big team. How are you a big team? Because you won, And you can, I always tell guys, genius is taking complexity to simplicity. And that's about how you want to do it when it gets to this point in the season. You practice your tail off. You've gone over detail. Let them play, man.
Pat Casey, thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Great hearing from you guys. Go Beavs.
There he goes, Pat Casey, baseball coach at Oregon State, 3-time national champion, and Beavers with a big one coming up this weekend, super regional. They will be hosting Florida State beginning on Friday. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth.